HBO Boardwalk Empire began its fifth and final season. Showtime's Homeland begins in a month and is set in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Zombie fans will have to wait until October for the return of AMC's The Walking Dead. And if they can't wait that long, Sci-Fi is premiering their new zombie show, Z Nation, this week. Meanwhile, the networks have a full lineup of new shows for the fall, including Gotham, Blackish, How to Get Away with Murder, Jane the Virgin, Marry Me, to name a few. Well, today on Radio Times, we're going to be talking about television, and we have two guests who have joined us. David Hilprand here with us in our Philadelphia studio. He's TV critic, for the Philadelphia Inquirer. David, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And joining us by telephone is Sonia Saraya, and she's senior television writer for the Onion AV Club. And Sonia, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, Marty. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, any questions or comments, and to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Would it be fair, David, to say just that there is something for everyone if you want to watch television?
Well, I think that's the aim every year, is that the networks try and cast it wide and get as many people as they can interested. They each have their own specialties. The CW is obviously appealing to a younger crowd, and so they brought on The Flash, which is a superhero show. Right. And CBS skews very much older, so they have the procedurals, and they brought out a new NCIS, which is remarkable, for New Orleans with Scott Bakula. But yeah, there is a little bit of everything. Probably fewer sitcoms than we're used to, but the sitcoms that are there are good.
Sonia, I wonder how much, cable might have upended network, because cable sort of goes on and has its own schedule, and sounds like the networks still think in terms of the fall season.
Yeah, there was last television season, Kevin Reilly, who's the president of Fox, tried to announce this idea that there would be no pilot season anymore because the schedule had changed so much. And now he is no longer the president of the Fox network. So I don't think that's working out so well for them. It's funny. I think that even though cable has changed a lot of our the television business in serious ways, viewers kind of expect the fall season to be like the resurgence of television. I think that schedule actually kind of works for a lot of people.
Well, I have to admit that I looked at both of your lists, and we're going to play some clips from some of the new network shows. I don't think I watch network television, and I wondered to you, David, whether, where is the lion's share of the audience? Are they still watching network television, going between the two, devoting themselves to cable?
Well, I think if you look at the mass numbers, which obviously is what the networks are trying to pull in, they still have a decided advantage, but that gap has narrowed and narrowed and narrowed, and now shows like The Walking Dead draw just as many viewers as do your NCIS and some of the other big network shows. So the gap is closed. I just wanted to say about the fall season and is it still going to be around? I think the networks do want a new model. It's just very hard to get away from it. And what you were saying about people not watching network TV as much, it's certainly true. And what they want to do is, it's not financially feasible for them to keep throwing 20 new shows out every fall and only have two of them make it through the season. It's murderous economically. So they want to go to a new, much more cable schedule where they put on fewer shows, but they stand a better chance of surviving.
Well, I do want to play a scene from Blackish, and Sonia, this was on your list. What interests you about this show?
It's a sitcom on ABC, and it's such a different kind of sitcom, I think. It has the perspective of a black man in his, comfortable middle age. He's a family man. He has four kids, happily married. And he's sort of realizing that because he has accomplished so much in his life, he has moved away from his roots, as a result of kind of breaking out of like a poor like background, working class background. So much of the story for him is trying to find a way to like continue to have his identity. And that all sounds like very complicated and a little like academic, but the show is so funny about it, and it like really engages it in this fun way.
Well, let's play a clip. And the father is played by Anthony Anderson. And Sonia, you set that up for us perfectly. Let's listen to a scene from Black-ish.
I want to have a bar mitzvah.
Oh.
And before you say anything, I know we're not Jewish, but Zach knows a rabbi who's great at pushing through conversion, so.
Hold on. So you'd be willing to forsake your own religion to have a party?
Short answer, yes.
Are you listening to this?
And, Dad, now that I think about it, if I do, you won't have to worry about anyone calling me Andy anymore, because when I convert, I'll get a Hebrew name. I'm going to go with either Shlomo or Shmuel.
What?
Both pretty solid, bro.
Shut up! Shut! You know what? Family meeting! Everybody, round the table, now!
Sonia, that sounds like a kind of a Bill Cosby update, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Go on, sorry.
No, that's okay. Just finish your thought, then I'll get David in on the conversation.
Well, I would say that's apt, that it is Cosby-esque, and Lawrence Fishburne plays the grandfather who's sort of lending his own expertise and more cynical point of view to it. I don't know. It's a very funny pilot. I'm not sure that the premise alone will keep this going. So we'll see what happens.
The premise alone meaning that an established middle class family trying to hold on to its African American roots.
Exactly.
Do you think it's got a future, Sonia?
I do. Although I do. I mean, I see David's point. I think that. I think that the what a network sitcom needs to do in order to survive is it's a little bit more difficult than, you know, other sitcoms because there's a bigger audience they're trying to go for and it's more expensive and et cetera. But I think that there could be a niche for this show. I think it's actually so relatable, I think, to anyone who has struggled with feeling a little bit different from their roots in whatever way. And what's funny is that even though Anthony Anderson's character, Andre, is the narrator and he sort of has his point of view, the show is also not afraid to, like, make him be wrong, which I think that is sort of a Cosby thing, like that it's okay for that point of view to be punctured. And the kids in it are hilarious, and the actress who plays his wife is hilarious. And I really was surprised that Lawrence Fishburne was going to be playing this kind of, like, you know, sort of like doddering grandfather character after being a dramatic actor with serious chops. But he makes it very funny. So I hope it has a future.
Well, I'm sorry that Lawrence Fishburne is playing a grandfather, because I always liked him as playing a younger person. Just picking up, David, on what Sonia just said, though, you do see more movie actors acting in TV. I mean, TV has good TV anyway, has good scripts, good storylines.
Right.
Often complicated storylines, often as good as a movie is.
I'd say that's absolutely true. You know, people have said we're in the golden age of TV dramas, and I think that's true, and that's what has attracted these name actors over. The other part, let's face it, is just that it's a much nicer schedule for them. And
is that what it is,
yeah,
too?
It's like a day job. You can go home at the end of the day and have dinner with your family, whereas if you're on a movie set, you're away for 3 months.
Right. They own you, right?
But the writing is so much better now than it was even 10 years ago.
Well, let's play a scene from Jane the Virgin. This was on one of your list, David.
That's correct.
Also on mine.
And also on yours. So perhaps, David, you can set up the premise on this.
Well, it's about a young lady whose mother is sort of had her at a very young age, and whose grandmother is very strict and religious, and she's more in line with her grandmother, and she's trying very hard to be a good girl. And then I don't want to give away the entire thing, but through a mix-up, she gets pregnant, even though she's not having sex. And it's just a great sort of magical, realistic show with, it reminds me a lot of the early days of Ugly Betty.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very, very funny.
And Sonia, does star Gina Rodriguez?
Yeah, she's going to be a star.
She's going to be a star. Well, we're not going to be able to see her, but let's listen, and this is a scene from Jane the Virgin.
Nausea and fainting spell solved. You're pregnant.
I'm sorry, but she's just not
pregnant. No, I'm not pregnant.
We tested your urine.
Trust me, the test is wrong.
False negatives are frequent. False positives are rare.
Jane, did you wear Michael?
No, we didn't. And it may be rare, but it happened. Because I'm a virgin.
A virgin? Maybe we should talk in private.
No, we don't need to talk in private.
I think we do.
Where did you get your degree from? The University of Dumbass? My daughter said that she is a freaking virgin, so do another damn test.
That's a scene from Jane the Virgin. And hopefully this isn't giving too much away, but apparently a doctor accidentally, artificially inseminates her, and that's how she becomes pregnant. Sonia, do you have high hopes for this this series?
I do. I think it's well placed on the CW because it's kind of, it's actually kind of modeling itself on Spanish telenovelas. It like makes a lot of references to that format in the show itself. Jane and her grandmother are fans of the telenovela, and I think that, like, you know, in American television, the format that is most like the telenovela is the teen soap opera. So I think that that actually works really well for the show.
And we are, no news here, we are a much more diverse country. And David, are TV shows reflecting that? Are we seeing more diverse storylines, actors, characters?
I think it's absolutely true. And this season, people will point to a handful of shows. To me, it's much more evident in the secondary characters. It's not that there are so many more leads that are ethnic, but now you're seeing faces of many different ethnicities turn up as doctors and as professors, and that didn't tend to happen a few years ago. The authority figures generally tended to be white, and that's not the case anymore, which I think is a good sign.
Do you see the same thing, Sonia?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I think that this Jane the Virgin and Blackish are two great examples of ensemble casts that are, that have like a deep bench, as David's saying, of representing just different viewpoints. I mean, because here's the thing, like, even if you have, you know, your one black character or your one Latina character on a show, they sort of seem to stand in for an entire culture. And what's happening here is that you have a whole cast of black characters or a whole cast of Latino characters who are interpreting their culture and their identity in their own ways. And for people who are outside that culture, I'm outside both of those cultures, it's such a revelation to see people handling these identities, these what we might call stereotypes, in different ways, you know, and processing them in different ways. It allows for diversity within that category, too.
And less stereotypical, you're saying, Sonia?
Oh, you know, absolutely. I mean, I think that what's interesting is I think that both shows, Jane the Virgin we were just talking about, they're, like, aware of, like, what the stereotype might be, you know, and in Blackish, like, Anthony Anderson's character, Andre, is, like, very specifically, like, worried that he's, like, moved too far away from the stereotype of a black man, and at the same time, they're, like, they're kind of breathing life into it by being, like, these are things that matter to me, that I want to make a part of myself, and then these are also, like, at times limitations, and I, you know, they want to be different, you know, they are different, and the world moves on.
The world moves on, and we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. We are talking about the fall TV season, and we want to know what you watch. What do you enjoy on TV? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. There's a lot to watch. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Cooper Neurological Institute offers a full range of neurological and neurosurgical interventions, including minimally invasive brain surgery and complex spinal procedures. From epilepsy, migraine, and movement disorder care to Leskel Gamma Knife Perfection Technology and neuro-oncology services, Cooper provides access to specialists at 10 locations in South Jersey and Pennsylvania. For a consultation, cooperhealth.org/CNI or 856-968-7965.
I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis.
Spending a relaxing Labor Day doing nothing at all got Greg and me thinking about work.
So this week on Sound Opinions, we dedicate the show to our nation's laborers with our favorite songs inspired by work.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Edith Stern lived in a Nazi concentration camp as a young woman. Now she lives in a retirement home in Chicago that caters to the last generation of Holocaust survivors.
They also came from Europe. They also suffered. And we had very much in common. And I felt I was at home.
That story next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with David Hiltbrand, TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's with us here in our Philadelphia studio. And Sonia Soraya, she's senior television writer for the Onion AV Club. And again, we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Are there some shows that you are looking forward to seeing back, perhaps, or perhaps ones you're ready to say goodbye to? I do want to play another scene from another show that's having its debut on network television. This is called How to Get Away with Murder. Viola Davis plays a brilliant and prestigious law professor in this legal thriller, and it's produced and created by Shonda Rhimes. Let's listen.
Good morning. I don't know what terrible things you've done in your life up to this point, but clearly your comm is out of balance to get assigned to my class. I'm Professor Annalise Keating, and this is Criminal Law 100, or as I prefer to call it,
How to Get Away with Murder.
Oh, what do you think, David?
I think this show stands in obviously a good chance because it's an all Shonda night. You know, they've got Grey's Anatomy and Scandal, and then this one. And Viola Davis is wonderful in it. I don't think the rest of the cast is all that good. It's a young cast, but I like the fact that it's set in Philadelphia. It's clearly supposed to be the University of Pennsylvania. I think they call it Middlebrook or something like that in the college. But it's got a nice setting, a nice pace, and you know, Shonda Rhimes knows how to write an hour-long drama.
Indeed. What do you think of this, Sonia?
You know, I found it a little messy. I think that the supporting cast is, as David was saying, not quite as strong as Viola Davis's character herself. And, you know, she doesn't get that much time in the pilot, so hopefully as the show goes on. But, you know, also, this is one of those things where, because Shonda Rhimes is, you know, a star at this point, a show-running star, the show's going to have time to find itself, and, you know, it's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine. It'll do okay. And I guess, I mean, Scandal is her most recent hit, David, and you know, huge success.
Yeah,
on TV.
But it didn't translate to the Emmys, which kind of surprised me again to see Kerry Washington not get the nod as Best Actress. But it was an odd Emmy year anyway.
Well, it was.
Both of you agreed it was an odd Emmy year. In terms of, well, it was like the same. It was like all the usual suspects, right?
Well, no, only in a couple of cases. On the sitcoms, yes, they tend to go for the exact same people year after year, and that's been the case going back to Night Court and shows like that and Mary Tyler Moore. But on the dramas, it was just a Breaking Bad year.
Oh,
I mean, it just killed.
Go ahead, Sonia. Like, people, you know, True Detective submitted as a drama because it was hoping to get awards, and it kind of, I mean, you know, Breaking Bad had a very powerful final season, but it was interesting. I think that a lot of people thought Matthew McConaughey had that Best Actor win in the bag, especially after winning an Oscar a few months beforehand. But yeah, it was a Breaking Bad year.
Yeah. And if I can just, you mentioned True Detective, which was a show that I really enjoyed. I didn't always understand, I have to say, Sonia. but I did appreciate the amazing acting. And it seems, at least on cable, there are certain shows that they you know, they really demand a lot of the viewer. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I think sometimes it's a risky thing. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I agree. I think that there's a risk-reward element to it, because the sort of flip side, you know, if you're investing all of this time and sort of brain power into a show and then it ends up being disappointing, you're kind of even more burned than if you were just watching something, like while cooking dinner. but yeah, at the same time, I think it opens up. I think True Detective is a great example of a show that paying close attention opened up understanding and appreciating the show on a much deeper level. Like, by the end of that season, I wasn't even able to watch True Detective critically because I was so invested in what was happening. And it really resonated with me. So I think that's a cool opportunity.
I thought it was a great. What did you think, David? And what do you think of this sort of phenomenon of complicated, demanding TV?
I think you're absolutely right. To me, it goes hand in hand with the Netflix era, because with people watching more and more in batches and sitting down and watching four and five episodes at a time, you can get away with that. Whereas with television, with traditional network television, it was, you know, 7 minutes and then 3 minutes of commercials, and your concentration was always being taken away from what was going on. But some of these shows are harder to follow, I think, than movies. Movies make more of an attempt to sort of give you background. You don't see that in television anymore. Some of these shows are really very dense.
Well, let me ask you, because I've been struggling watching An Honorable Woman, which mm-hmm. is on the BBC. And, I mean, that is, again, I don't exactly know what's going on, but I keep watching.
Isn't that something to admit that you can't follow a television show?
Always. It's like, who is that character? Did we see them before?
Well, I have to say, this is one, like Sonia was saying about True Detectives, where I can't watch it critically because I'm so in love with it, and I love what Maggie Gyllenhaal's done with the lead.
Yeah.
She's so fantastic.
Sonia, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I actually watched all of that already. I don't know if you guys have watched all of it yet.
No.
But I definitely agree with you that it's sort of deliberately so complex and like nonlinear in its storytelling that like you sort of see something and then you have to watch it to understand all of the pieces of it.
Right.
I don't know if you've noticed, for example, the opening credits have scenes from the entire miniseries, and as you keep watching, you sort of can identify like each new scene when you watch like the next episode. That one's like a puzzle box. You like keep going, and you're sort of finding new layers.
Well, Sonia, don't give it away. But is it worth it in the end? Is there some kind of a payoff at the end?
I definitely found that to be true. It's certainly powerful. Hugo Blick is the writer and director of that, and he and Maggie Gyllenhaal, when they were doing their press tour for the show, were just so like mutually like interconnected the way that they were thinking about the character, and Nessa, the character of Nessa, who's the main character, and then also just like the way that the whole thing plays out. It's almost like a curiosity, you know. Uh-huh. It's on Sundance here, and I think that's like the perfect place for it because it is so like it is this like very artistic puzzle box.
And that's Sonia Saraya. She's a senior television writer for the Onion AV Club, David Hilbrand TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we have been talking about some of the network shows that will be debuting through the fall and talking about some of the challenging shows that are on cable that we enjoy but don't necessarily always understand. And again, we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. I do want to play another clip, and this is, again, a network show. This is called Marry Me, and it's about a couple that's been living together for a number of years. Annie is played by Casey Wilson, Jake played by Ken Marino. They have a long-term relationship, and they've decided to, I guess, propose to each other, propose marriage, mm-hmm. and let's listen to a scene.
Annie, what are you doing? My place of employment.
I am so, so sorry. Can we please just pretend like the last few days didn't happen? Like we just landed from that amazing week in Mexico. Jake.
Annie.
Will you marry me?
Yes, okay.
Not to kill the mood here, but did she just say you guys were in Mexico last week? Because you told me you were in the hospital in agony over whether or not to pull the plug on your dad.
David, you like this show. At least it's on your list you sent us.
Yeah, I love this show. It's from David Caspi, the guy who did Happy Endings, which was another very underrated sitcom that didn't last long. And Casey Wilson was on that as well. Great chemistry between the two of them, and the writing is so funny. It's just one of those shows that gives you hope that sitcoms can survive.
What do you think about this, Sonia?
I love the cast. Casey Wilson is like a comedic genius. I mean that's like a hyperbolic, but everything that I have seen her in has been sort of amazing. She was in Hulu's The Hot Wives of Orlando, which was a parody of the Real Housewives franchise. Yeah, So, and I mean, she's really able to, like, inhabit these roles. And she's going to be in the upcoming feature film, Gone Girl, actually. Oh. So this is like a really interesting time in her career. And Ken Marino, I'm a fan of from the long, long dead but never forgotten Party Down, which was a two-season long sitcom on Stars about a whole bunch of people who were trying to break into Hollywood, but had only managed to get so far as catering. And so he's just great in that, and the two of them have great energy together. And yes, David was saying it's by the Happy Endings showrunner, and it has that Happy Endings kind of spastic feel. It's very funny.
You want to add anything to that, David?
I just
You're smiling, the, I should say.
I'm just agreeing with her, but I think the thing I remember Ken Marino for is Burning Love, which is a online comedy, which is a spoof of the whole Bachelor and Bachelorette concept, and he's very good in that. He plays a fireman who is meeting all of these dental hygienists, and you know, they're all throwing themselves at him, and it's very bizarre.
We have a tweet from Zach. He says, what about the internet, like Netflix, Amazon, etc., shows vis-a-vis diversity? Could they be more willing to diversify? Have you thought about that, David?
Yeah, and there's no – I think they're almost under more pressure to stay conventional. I think the networks have been much more sensitized to the issue. I don't think a show starting out and trying to get attention – is really that willing to take a chance and do something all that different in terms of casting. They might do something in terms of formatting. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that shows that you'll find currently, that could change, but currently, no. I don't think they're any more apt to be diverse than our network.
What do you think about that, Sonia?
I see the same thing. And I do think some of it's pressure. I also think that some of it is an unfortunate view of what makes good or prestige television. I happened to watch several of the Amazon pilots that were released for their upcoming pilot season. They're almost all about, at the risk of sounding a little flip, but they're almost all about rich white people. And it makes perfect sense because they're trying to get the attention of an audience that is predominantly wealthy and predominantly white, who is interested in finding these like new and different television, because that seems to be the general prevailing idea in television of where the audience they need to chase is. You know, that's the audience that they're playing for on AMC, that's the audience they're playing for on HBO, on Showtime, etc. It would be so nice. I think that Orange is the New Black on Netflix kind of shook that up in the best way. I think that of the streaming shows.
It's confusing.
There's a lot going on.
There is.
That's the one that, to me, like, really speaks of, like, fantastic diversity, and it has gotten accolades as a result.
Let me get, looks like TJ from Havertown to join our conversation. Hi, TJ, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Great show. Thank you.
Just briefly, because I understand that you did a show actually about this show that I discovered recently that I think just came on the summer called The Divide.
Yep.
And I had a stumble across. It's on the We Channel Network or something. I still didn't know what that is. But it's, for people who are not familiar, it takes place in Philadelphia. It's superbly acted and written. It's very intense about people who work on behalf of people who were on death row, and that they may have been falsely convicted. And I was just curious what the three of you folks thought of it. And also, I just want to real quick say, David, I really enjoy your writing, especially when you get an opportunity to work some of your humor in. I really enjoy your work. So, I'm just curious.
No, we hear you.
Hang up.
That's great, TJ.
Thank you, and I will listen. Thank
you
very much.
You're very welcome. And we did do a show about The Divide, in part because it was filmed here in Philadelphia. And we did have someone who worked on a local innocence project, because that's also part of the premise. Have you looked at this show, David?
Yeah, I reviewed it when it first came on and gave it a very, very positive review. And not just because it's local. I like the local aspect of it. But I thought it had some wonderful performances. Maybe... a little, the episode seemed a little stretched to me, a little padded, but I really, really liked it.
Sonia, did you look at this?
Unfortunately, I haven't. I sort of forgot that this was a Philadelphia-based show and I should brush up on my Philadelphia.
It's okay. You're doing fine.
But no, I haven't. Although, you know, I did speak to some of the actors who are involved. Nia Long, who plays... I'm trying to look up what her character's name is. I can't see it. But she plays a supporting character on the show. And the passion with which these actors were talking about this show, like, really, it really excited me. This was actually originally a show that was pitched to AMC, which is, you know, the same network with Breaking Bad and Mad Men, and AMC and WE, which is the network this is on, they're part of the same family, and it was kind of a vote of confidence for AMC that they were like, we kind of want this to, like, centerpiece our show, our, like, dramas on WE, rather than sort of be buried behind The Walking Dead or something on AMC. So I thought that was a really interesting decision.
Well, as our caller said, he'd never heard of this channel, and The Simpsons is doing their marathon on some channel. David, I've never heard of. I mean, they're just spawning channels out there?
They are. They're just multiplying in the dark like mushrooms. But I want to thank TJ. That was very nice of you to say. That's another part of this whole equation. You were saying how the landscape is getting more complex and varied, and part of that, a big part of that, which I think you'll see increasingly, is the smaller niche channels doing real, solid, original programming. And it's also happening online. You see, like, Yahoo Screen has now got its own bunch of shows that it's got coming out to compete with Hulu, to compete with Amazon. But with all of these people, everyone wants their own programming now, and it's great for viewers.
Boardwalk Empire on last night on HBO. Sonia, this is its final season, its fifth season. Do you like Boardwalk Empire? Just ask it in a straightforward question.
Like, yeah. I do like Boardwalk.
Yeah, we got a funky phone line with her. Let's try to call her back. That's Sonia Soraya. We'll try to, Soraya, I should say. We'll call her back and get her on a better phone line. David, do you like Boardwalk Empire?
Well, my daughter would kill me if I didn't say I do, so I'll say I do.
Are you lying to us?
I am lying, yeah. Not very well, obviously.
No, apparently.
It's a great show, and it's got some wonderful things about it. I wasn't crazy about last night's episode. This is the final season. It was very, very heavy with flashbacks. They're trying to show Nucky's childhood and how he became the man he is. I don't know that that's all that interesting. I think the reason the show has lasted 5 years is all that period stuff is fine, but I don't think it's that absorbing. If they hadn't had Al Capone in there, I think this show would have folded 3 years ago. So they'll have these long period things, which are sort of melodramatic, and then they'll throw in some startling violence just to sort of keep you glued to the TV set. It hasn't been I'm not wild about it, no.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and I should say to our listeners that David Hilprand and I were talking about Steve Buscemi, who plays Nucky Thompson, both David and I thinking that he's just not right for the role. He just doesn't look like the kind of Nucky Thompson I would have in my head. Well, we're talking about the TV season with David Hilprand, TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. We hope to reconnect with Sonia Soraya. Why do I say that? Soraya, and she's senior television writer for the Onion AV Club. And we want to hear from you, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. Continuing Education at PAFA offers Saturday classes for high school students to develop their artistic skills and build a strong portfolio of work under the guidance of PAFA's esteemed faculty. It's an opportunity to learn everything from classical painting to drawing for comics and animation, as well as the principles of composition and perspective. Registration now for fall classes. Details online at pafa.edu/cefall.
Fresh Air's book critic Maureen Corrigan has just written a book about the novel she loves more than any other. The novel she and many other critics consider the greatest American novel, The Great Gatsby. In writing about Gatsby, she also writes about herself as a reader and teacher. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Maureen about her new book, So We Read On. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
It's a universal dream living in a supportive, positive family environment. But creating thriving family relationships takes much more than patience, effort, and time. On this Voices in the Family with Dan Gottlieb, real families, real issues, and real solutions. Dr. Gottlieb and CFR therapist Dr. Steve Treat take callers' questions on family dynamics, from post-divorce parenting to aging parents and anything in between. Today at noon on WHYY FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. So are you a fan of The Good Wife or Orange is the New Black or how about The Walking Dead or Games of Thrones or even Homeland? Have you been trying, like me, to follow the plot for An Honorable Woman? Did you tune in last night for Boardwalk Empire as it begins its final season? And are you looking forward to Ken Burns' upcoming series, The Roosevelts? We're talking with David Hiltbrand, TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And it sounds like our phone lines are down, but we will hopefully reconnect with our other guests and reconnect with you. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. David, just because I saw we lost a phone call here, but she loves Rectify on Sundance, a fascinating show.
I think that's absolutely true. It's one of these shows that has a very, very loyal and devoted audience, and I can see why. You were talking about complex, offbeat dramas, and it's not only happening, you know, on Sundance, which has had some really good series lately, but even the network's going in that direction. You see Fox this fall, next in October, has Grace Point, which is an adaptation, almost a note-for-note adaptation of Broadchurch, which is a very popular BBC, and they even brought over David Tennant to play the lead again, which is remarkable. And Anna Gunn from Breaking Bad will play the other detective on it. But I think it's all moving in that direction towards dramas that both entertain but also are provocative, and Rectify certainly fits in that grouping.
And perhaps this says more about me than about the TV schedule, but it seems like there are these shows, The Bridge, you know, they're complicated, but they're also these dark plots, these characters you're not sure, do I like them, do I not like them? Ray Donovan is one.
Right.
What do you make of that?
I think if you're going to look at a sort of precedent for it, I would say it's The Sopranos and the vast popularity. Tony Soprano just seemed to touch a lot of buttons for people. And I think since then we've had a great, like Walter White. On Breaking Bad. It's all these, they're not heroes, but they are the main character, and you're sort of drawn into what they're doing, and they're charismatic. And you want to like them. You're just trained as a TV viewer to like the person who's on camera the most. But I think that and you saw that in True Detectives as well, where they play with your expectations, and they make these people very hard to like. And it's working.
Is that important? It is working.
Yeah.
It is working. We have it. Mark sent us an email. What's your opinion of Gary Trudeau's Amazon series? It's called Alpha House. He says, beautifully cast, John Goodman, Clark Johnson, Wanda Sykes, Cynthia Nixon. Never heard of this. Very funny. That's a great cast.
Yeah, it's a comedy set in Washington, D.C., in which, like, congressmen live together, and because they've various picadillos they've been involved in, so they have to share a house. It's almost too well cast, actually. I think that the stars sort of overwhelm the material. I don't think it's... I think it would be almost funnier with less-known actors, but it's a funny series.
I was also, Veep, of course, is about...
one of my favorite shows. Veep, I think, is hilarious.
And did she get... She got an Emmy, right?
Every year.
Every year, right. There's Madam Secretary that's coming.
Right.
There's also State of Affairs, and the theory being these are all Hillary Rodham Clinton clones.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true. I would certainly say that Madam Secretary on CBS with Taya Leone is... There's definite... ways to look at that as Hillary Clinton. But the State of Affairs, I just don't see that. I think somebody was really stretching to make a point there, because it's not... It's more... you're more into her love life and stuff than you are her diplomacy.
Okay, we have Sonia Soraya is back, I'm happy to say. Sorry about that, Sonia. She's senior television writer for the Onion AV Club. Thanks for coming back and being patient and joining us on Radio Times.
No problem.
We've covered a little bit of territory while we lost you. What do you think of these shows, Madam Secretary, the State of Affairs, Veep, and we had a emailer that talked about Gary Trudeau's series called Alpha House. There seems to be an interest in politics.
And House of Cards.
And
as
House
well.
Of Cards, of course, an interest in politics.
Yeah, well, and I think Scandal is kind of a big one there, too. You know, it's interesting. I think The West Wing a few years ago, I guess almost 10 years ago now, was a show that I think a lot of viewers saw as being a window into the White House, at least a sort of optimistic window into the White House. And I think that came at a time where, like, the Hollywood establishment was feeling very upset with the way that the government was being run, and so created this kind of, like, utopian vision of it, which is, I mean, I think that's sort of what Aaron Sorkin's West Wing is. And then now I feel like the sort of crop of stuff we're seeing is coming out, instead of idealistic, it's coming out very cynical and very, like, pessimistic. House of Cards is, like, a very, like, dark, dark idea. Yeah, Veep is very funny and very biting. Like, there's very little faith in government there. I think Scandal, too, is very in between the sort of, like, splashy, like, melodrama. There's a lot of cynicism there, too, about how well government functions and how well, like, what we see in the media or the stories that we see coming out of politics are how well they reflect the truth at all.
Go ahead.
I think that Madam Secretary is going back a little bit to that optimism. It's a more feel good show. State of Affairs, I don't even know what's happening there. I think it's a little confused about what it wants to be.
Oh, fair enough. Well, I certainly know the feeling. She mentioned Aaron Sorkin, and the newsroom is going to come back.
Briefly.
What do you make of that show?
It's one of those where, in the course of a single hour, I would be deeply, deeply enthralled with it, and then swear I was never going to watch it again. All, like, three times, back and
love
forth,
hate,
flip back and
love
yeah,
hate.
Absolutely. But Aaron Sorkin is one of my favorite writers, and certainly on television. I've liked everything he's done, even the stuff that wasn't very good. I think Newsroom, I just love it. I don't know. I can't stop watching it. I hate it. I love it. I can't stop.
Oh.
But this is its last season, too. There's a lot of shows going off the air this year.
Do you love it, hate it, Sonia?
Oh, God. I mostly hate it, I think. although I know, David, what you're saying. I was a huge fan of The West Wing. It was one of the first shows I was just, like, really into. And it's funny because I can identify the things that I liked about The West Wing in The Newsroom. And then there's also I think that Aaron Sorkin has, I didn't know this was possible, but I think that he's gotten even more crotchety about the State of Affairs. It's such a shouty show, and very holier than thou, and yeah, and you know, it's funny because a lot of people that I respect love it. my parents really like it, and, like, my high school teachers, when I, like, get back in touch with them, they're like, oh, like, I love The Newsroom. I feel like it's, like, really saying something about, like, politics in America. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, how
I hope not. That's all I can say. Let me give out that phone number again, and it's 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about what's on TV, and we want to know what you enjoy, what you're looking forward to seeing, and you can also send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. David, you wanted to make sure we talked about Gotham.
Right, only because I think it will be one of the big hits. It's certainly the one that has been promoted the most all summer. And this is a sort of origin story for Batman, so it goes back to the early days of the man who will become Commissioner Gordon when he's just a regular cop on the beat. And you also get to see the arrival in their earlier versions also of the villains, the Penguin and people like that, Catwoman, and the Riddler, as they are, you know, 10 years before they actually become villains. So it's an intrigue. They obviously spent a ton of money on this. It looks beautiful. It's very cinematic and very dark, in the way that the Batman films are. But I just think it works really well for television, and it's that sort of geek boy tone that television watchers like.
Well, Sonia, do you think it's all the geek boys that are going to the movies to watch all these, you know, all the superhero movies, then they'll be watching similar versions on TV?
Yeah, you know, I think that the DC Comics franchise has done a great job with finding ways to bring their comic books to TV. You know, the Arrow, the Flash, we were talking, I'm sorry, not the Arrow, it's just Arrow, right, and the Flash, which are both on CW, we were talking about before. I definitely think that they're going for that demographic with Gotham. I think they're probably going to cast a wider net because there is the interesting angle here with these character stories that are going to have all of this time to develop, you know? We see Batman as, like, I think he's, like, between the ages of 10 and 12 in the, you know, in the first episode. And I don't think this is a spoiler. In, like, the first few minutes of the episode, you see Bruce Wayne's parents, like, killed. So clearly it's this very formative, I mean, clearly it's, like, really formative years for him, and it's about, like, forming these relationships between this, like, young Bruce Wayne and his butler, Alfred, and with Commissioner Gordon, who I guess is still Lieutenant Gordon at this point. And Lieutenant Gordon himself has a boss, I can't remember his name, but he's played by Donald Logue, who Ben McKenzie, who plays Gordon, they have this interesting kind of good cop, bad cop dynamic, because Donald Logue's character is, like, a little corrupt, too. And and Jada Pinkett Smith is in it as a villain. She's actually, like, a non-canon, non-comic book villain, but I think it's good that they introduced her, too. She makes, like, for an interesting stab of light there. There's this wonderful moment in the pilot where she, like, punches someone, I believe, and then gets up and adjusts her weave, and it's, like, so perfect.
That's great. That's great.
It's an amazing moment.
We have an email from Eric. The Leftovers. I love it. Do you love The Leftovers, David?
Was that you editorializing there?
No. No. I actually haven't been watching this, okay, but I've heard good things about it.
I am not a fan. I love the book. I watched, because I was reviewing it, 3 episodes, and I felt sort of damaged by it.
Damaged?
I think it's so dark, and I just don't see the appeal of it whatsoever. And I know I'm not alone, but I'm in the minority here. A lot of people are watching it. I haven't liked it from the very beginning. I just do not see this show.
Do you see it, Sonia?
I'm in the same boat, I think. I have watched all of it. I've been reviewing it weekly, and I have been in conflict with a lot of our readers who find a lot in the show. I think the way I sort of described it in one of my reviews, which I think is still the most accurate way, is that it's kind of a show that's like a Rorschach test. Like, it's throwing up a lot of ink blots, and there are some people who are getting a lot out of it, and that is great. But it's not universally interpretable. I don't think it's clear as a show. It's a very, like, muddled storytelling, and then at times it creates imagery that's, like, totally powerful. The finale was last night, and the last 20 minutes of that finale, I don't think this isn't a spoiler. Basically, the main character, Kevin, ends up having to run into a burning building. And it's just the way that it's shot, the music, it's stunning. And that, to me, is, like, what the show is good at. It's good at creating these, like, incredibly powerful moments. And then when you sort of get back and, like, take a step back, you're like, actually, I don't really know what that means. But,
so,
you know, it doesn't really matter.
Let me throw something else out before we have to say goodbye. The fact that Stephen Colbert is moving to late night, to network late night. And I guess one of the questions is, will he become Stephen Colbert? All I can tell you is that I already miss him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm already in mourning that we're going to lose the show. I know Larry Wilmore is going to have his own show there, The Minority Report. What are your thoughts, David, about this? Of course, we don't know what he's going to come up with.
Right, that's exactly true.
And he has great writers.
he is so wonderful at what he does. I have that same sense of like, oh my gosh, we're losing such a wonderful thing here. I watch him every night.
Me too.
I don't know that I'll watch The Late Show every night. And I am a big David Letterman fan. I'm a big Stephen Colbert fan. I just don't know that we need another late night talk show. Whereas The Colbert Report was so one of a kind, so sui generis and so smart. I look forward to seeing what he is. I don't want to prejudge him because I haven't seen him do it in character as himself, but I am going to miss the Colbert Report.
How about for you, Sonia?
David, you said that so perfectly. I think that's it. I mean, I don't know what Stephen Colbert is going to be in this new iteration, but I'm just less likely to watch a talk show because I don't find them as interesting as I find the Colbert Report. You know, I think that he was doing something very interesting there. I have a lot of faith in the man, I have to say. Like, he's always done a great job in pretty much any setting that he's been in. I bet that he'll find a way to make that really interesting, but right now, I'm not, like, really excited about it, if that makes sense.
Well, it sounds like we're all in mourning for the whatever happens to Stephen Colbert and his show. Well, Sonia Soraya, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she's a senior television writer for the Onion AV Club. David Hilbrand, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And he's TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can learn much more about this program, including how to find us on Facebook and how to follow us on Twitter and how to download podcasts of the program. And we welcome Quinn Libson, who starts her Radio Times internship today. Welcome aboard, Quinn. The show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens, and Kevin Griffin is our engineer for today's edition of the show. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we want to close things out with a theme from Boardwalk Empire, Straight Up and Down, performed by Brian Jones Massacre.